Shame on him.
Here's Johnny.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Why so serious?
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this fun little bonus episode that we are doing. I guess this is in lieu of Ryan's Chasing the Gold episodes that he typically does here with In Session. But Mr. Ryan McQuaid is very busy, as I'm sure many of you listening know. So I am jumping in because I feel like we need to talk about the award season this year. Not only has it kicked off in full gear, but my God, the discourse. I need someone here to help me break it down because it is absolutely insane. So joining us is the great Brian Rowe, who actually writes for us at InSessionFilm.com. Of course, he has his own show and YouTube channel as well. Brian, thanks for joining me in this endeavor.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So as we get into this, I don't know how else to start this off other than to just throw it all at the wall. What the hell is going on this award season? Why are people mad at Babylon? And what's going to happen when it wins Best Picture?
I am so frustrated by this discourse right now. Babylon flopped. And ha ha ha. It's like people are almost celebrating it. And I don't understand. Yeah.
I don't understand it either. Like, I don't understand it either. And, you know, because I saw your tweet earlier today as we are recording this. I very much do agree. The box office for Babylon is disheartening for sure.
Right.
But it's not a surprise.
No.
Surely we had enough logic to think that a movie that starts off with a 45-minute orgy sequence was not going to do the best at the box office. I mean,
taking a giant dump in the opening 5 minutes.
Exactly. On the camera, right at the audience. So, yeah, I don't think that was a surprise to anybody.
Right.
At least it wasn't a surprise to me of many people wanting to jump on that. But it's disheartening not only because of the results, of course it is, but do we not want those kind of ambitious swings from studios? I feel like we should want that.
And I think we'll always get a few here and there, but it makes it that much harder when a movie like Babylon, which apparently did cost more than $80 million.
Yeah.
When a movie like this does this poorly, it's not like it opened with 8 or 10 or 12 million. It opened with like 4 to 5 opening weekend.
Yeah.
That's tough. And so I mean, I saw the film yesterday, and outside of a few things in the third hour, which I thought were kind of slow and I didn't love the ending, I was really taken with it. I thought it was a great movie. And it's sad to me that we're not going to get as many of these kinds of original films, especially at the end of the year in all the years to come.
Yeah. And that's really my thing with it. I mean, we can debate the movie all day.
Right.
And there's much to talk about just in terms of what Chazelle's doing with the film as a film, with its themes, its characters, its drama. You know, we can certainly dissect all of that, but as cinephiles, as critics, I don't understand the pouring on and urging on its failure. Like, we should want these. I mean, because these kind of films are dying anyway.
Right.
And $4 million in 4 days or whatever it was certainly does not urge the studios further. So, yeah, I mean, even movies like that don't work for me, I still want to see those movies.
Right. I think is the sad reality, though, when it comes to award season, is when a movie bombs this hard, it does become more difficult for the movie to win and be nominated for things. I don't know why that is. I don't see what box office has to do with the quality of films and things. But now I wonder about Babylon's chances at the Oscars. The nominations come out on January 24th. They're going to look at this and all of the mixed reviews too. But I wonder now, can it get into Best Picture? I thought it would. And now I'm like, maybe because of the low box office, come mid-January, it won't place in picture, which is sad.
I think, yeah, that is a really great point. The Academy, for one reason or another, really emphasizes box office.
Yeah.
You know, because I think of something like Bohemian Rhapsody didn't get great reviews.
That was very well at the box office.
But it did extremely well at the box office, and therefore the Academy ate that up. Yeah. Obviously, we know where things went from there with that movie, so... You know, or even something like that first Black Panther comes out, grosses over $1 billion and goes on to get a nomination.
Yeah, over a year later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So they do consider that, for better or worse, for worse. But they do consider that quite drastically. So I am curious. I will say this. I'm very pro Babylon for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like you still, I'm still figuring out that ending. Or at least, you know, not the final scene. The final scene, I think, is great. But everything with Tobey Maguire is, I don't know what to think of it.
It was interesting.
It was interesting. But I mostly loved everything else around that scene. I am rooting for it if the Academy decides to embrace it. Generally speaking, it seems like it's too ambitious for the Academy's taste, but... At the very least, if the performances won't be nominated, if Chazelle's direction won't be nominated, and I'm kind of dubious on both of those fronts, I just hope that Justin Hurwitz's score gets in because it is incredible. It is so good.
I was thinking Calva could maybe take that fifth best actor slot. Now I don't think that's happening, but I do think Margot Robbie still has a shot. She's really good.
She's really good. And it's Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
You know, people know her. I could see her getting in for sure. Diego Calva, I love, might give my favorite performance of the film, but I don't know. He doesn't have the name recognition. That'll likely hurt his chances. Yeah. But I do really like the performances on the whole. I think the ensemble is really great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just don't know if the Academy would go for it. Let's move on to something else. Let's talk about another ambitious project, because maybe I am juxtaposing my own theory here. Although generally speaking, I do think there's a history of the Academy not going for these overly ambitious films. But that said, Everything Everywhere All at Once is getting tons of love everywhere. Surely the Academy... we'll go for that film, correct?
Or can you imagine? Could you imagine what would happen on film Twitter if on January 24th,
full nuclear meltdown.
All it got was like best supporting actor for Ke-Hee Kwan and nothing else? Can you imagine?
I mean, you know, you say that jokingly, and I can almost see that happening. I can see that happen because the Academy does these things that baffle me.
Yeah, from I don't think it will.
I don't think that'll happen.
No. But I do. I mean, what really makes me nervous is Michelle Yeoh. Like, she miss Best Actress if they went for, you know, five other performances? I don't think that will happen. But I'm like mentally prepared for it to do that. And I will be losing my mind because I think she could win.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. If she doesn't get in, then who replaces her? Do you think?
And I think that one thing is I felt that Margot Robbie was a pretty solid fourth or fifth option because Babylon is now underperforming with critics at the box office. I think she's now on shaky ground. There's just so much love this whole year for Everything Everywhere All at Once that I think it gets into picture director, actress, supporting actor. Supporting actress is a different, is an unusual category, in that does it get in for Curtis or Stephanie Hsu or nothing?
Yeah,
I was really curious about that.
Well, and that's, you know, like Stephanie Hsu has been an interesting conversation this award season because early on it felt like she had no momentum.
Right.
It feels like she's picked up some. Does she get in for that film? I don't know, but I also feel like Diego Calva, she doesn't, and she's a new name. Her? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't really know. It's hard to say.
I watched the film again a week or two ago, And it worked a lot better for me on a second watch. I don't know if that was the same for everybody else, but I was really confused the first time, and the second time it made more sense. But I'm like, that's a, like, Jamie Lee Curtis would be a very unique nomination. It's not your typical kind of Oscar nominated performance. It's, you know, what, after that opening few scenes with her, it's a lot of just little snippets throughout the film until the end. And so, I don't know if that's going to happen. Like, they're saying she might win at the Golden Globes. And I'm like, if she wins at the Golden Globes, she might get in. So I don't know.
Well, that is a really interesting point. I love Jamie Lee Curtis. Don't get me wrong. That would be a really odd nomination. I don't know if I would understand that. And I completely agree with you. I recently revisited the film. And yeah, there's some interesting exchanges between her and Michelle Yeoh early on. But yeah, throughout most of the film, she there's a physical element to her performance that's interesting. I don't know if it garners awards conversation, but for Jamie Lee Curtis, it's interesting. And then, yeah, there's a couple of snippets where there's very little dialogue. It's mostly visual storytelling there. And it is moving. It's obviously very funny and weird. But again, does it garner awards love? That I don't know, especially when so much of the film revolves around the mother-daughter dynamic. And that is so incredible that why would you go for the performance on the periphery and not the one that's part of the nucleus of the movie?
I have found in years past that usually when there are like two performances from a movie and they're kind of bouncing around throughout award season, usually the Oscars make the right choice. They go with the one that's a little bit where we're all saying, how is Curtis going to get in over Sue? And it's like, well, wait till the Oscar nominations. They usually get it right.
Yeah.
At the same time, I love Jamie Lee Curtis. She's never been nominated before. So that would be cool. So I'm like, I'm of two minds about it.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It is a bit of a double-edged sword in that regard. It is just kind of funny to me, even when you think about that actor-on-actor thing she did with Colin Farrell. The whole time her presence there, at least to me, it felt like, why am I here? Like, why is this? She even says that at some point, like, I'm surprised that this, not just the film, but my presence in it has garnered this kind of reaction. Like, you know, she's like, I was there for like 3 days.
That makes her endearing. That was really shocking when she revealed that. It was that in that video where she said, this is a film I shot before the pandemic in mostly 2 days.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Jamie, don't tell the voters you made your whole movie in 2 days. That doesn't look good.
Yeah, it felt weird. It felt like she was confused as to why she's in this conversation. And again, I say that with love, but I kind of agree with that sentiment.
But Naomi Harris shot Moonlight in 3 days.
That's
and
true.
Everybody knew that, and she got a nomination for that, so I don't think it's going to hurt her chances, but
that's true. I think mostly the difference, and I mean, we kind of already talked about it, but it's like, what is she doing in that movie? It's an interesting supporting role that works for the film for sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's anything beyond that re-awards talk. So.
Well, I think what helps her is that Best Supporting Actress is so chaotic right now. There's no front runner. Like, the only person who looks like she could be a front runner and win a bunch of stuff is Kerry Condon for The Banshees of Inisherin.
Yep.
She seems to me like she could kind of sweep, but she's also not that well known of a name.
That's true.
Which makes me wonder, can she win all of these prizes? Not a lot of people know her. It's not like Banshees has been like this huge money maker and everyone's watching it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's a clear front runner, and that's what makes this category really interesting going from SAG to Oscars. Like, I don't think anything's going to line up exactly moving forward.
It is really weird in that regard. It feels to me like Stephanie Hsu should be dominating the category, but she isn't. And maybe it'll come down to her and Condon and these two names that aren't quite as prominent yet. Hopefully that'll change soon. But I don't know. It is interesting.
I just saw Triangle of Sadness on Sunday, and Dolly Dayton is great.
That's another
one. She's only really in the last 40
minutes. The last act. Yeah.
you have to get through like 10, 15 minutes of people throwing up, projectile vomiting, and all sorts of. It's like I watched Triangle of Sadness and all of that bodily stuff, and then I watched Babylon the day after, and I'm like, what's happening here? It's just too much.
Yeah, it is a lot. Yeah,
but you have to get like, if you get to the third act and really go with it, she's great. You have to take that into account when you're only at the end of a movie. I don't know if you can win stuff if you're not in the first two thirds.
Yeah, and Triangle is a very weird movie in the sense that it's three distinct acts. It's almost like a series of vignettes. Mm-hmm. So, like, how would a voter, decipher that? I don't know. It's an interesting question. That's for sure. Let me ask you about Top Gun Maverick. Yes. So this is a big movie that came out earlier in the year. Everyone seemed to love it. It made gobs of money. Mm-hmm. Does it get into Best Picture, do you think?
Yes. I think that's in my Oscar predictions video for Best Picture, I said there were five locks, and I picked Top Gun Maverick as a lock. I think if it was five films, unusually enough, if it was only five nominees, I don't know if it gets that fifth slot. But with 10, right? It's 10 this year.
Yeah.
So it gets in with 10 for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Does it get anything beyond that, do you think?
I don't know. There's been a lot of talk going around about Tom Cruise getting a Best Actor nomination, and I am not for that. But as people know, if you've been following me on Twitter, but Best Actor, which is usually very competitive year to year, usually there's like five people that are just like locked in, maybe like a sixth alternate. This year, we only have three. We only have Colin Farrell, Austin Butler, and Brendan Fraser. And then the other two are kind of up for grabs right now. And because of that, and all of the love for Top Gun Maverick, and it's been a long time since he was nominated for Magnolia. Mm-hmm. Like, it could just be love of kind of him as an actor, as a performer, and everything he does for these action films. Like, he could get in, and I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to be mad. It's okay. But I'm just like, really? For Best Actor? So I think it's possible. He did get in at Critics' Choice, which surprised me. So now I'm like, maybe he can get in there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to happen, but we'll see.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I would be surprised if he gets in. I will say though, I think I'd love it. I do think it's one of his best performances in a long time, because we haven't really seen him really delve into anything meaningful since, who knows?
It's been a long time. Since 99? I want to say his last great performance in a movie was Collateral from 2004.
Collateral. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
In almost 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I love about Top Gun is that it is a sequel, but it's less of a sequel, I think, and more so a bombastic, high-octane action film bottled into a Manchester by the Sea. That's what that movie is. It's an action movie, Manchester by the Sea. And I found that fascinating. There's two scenes in particular that I think are really moving. Mm-hmm. The scene early on when he's first thrown out of the bar and he hears Rooster playing the song on the piano. And there's an incredible wide shot of him just looking in from the outside that I think is devastating. That piece of acting alone, and again, the Academy never goes for subtlety. They're anti-subtlety. But the introspective reflection there, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. And then more overtly, there's his, again, Manchester by the Sea, I can't beat it moment that he has with Iceman. I can't get over it. And while there is some dialogue there, again, what that scene is mostly is the camera just stationary looking at Maverick. That's all that it is. And it's Tom Cruise having to say a lot without saying really anything at all. And I think it's really great. I think it's fantastic. To me, that is by far the best work he's done in years. To your point, though, is it worthy of being in the conversation for best actor? I don't know. I don't know if it is, but I think it's good enough that if he got in, I would have no problem with it.
It's okay. I mean, there's still a lot more films I need to see. I need to see After Sun. I'm hearing great things about After Sun and some of these smaller movies where I think that the performances in those might be more worthy, but there's still a lot to see. The introspection with Jeremy Pope I want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I will say this. Top Gun. Tom Cruise, I don't think he should win. And let me be clear about that. If he got in, if he was nominated, and I don't even know if he'll make my personal top five when we do the In-Session Film Awards here pretty soon. But if he got in, if he got nominated, I'd be happy. That category should come down to two people. It should be Colin Farrell, because he had a phenomenal year, not just in Banshees.
Mm-hmm. After Yang.
Earlier in the year, I said his performance in After Yang was the best performance I've ever seen from him. And I didn't even know much about Banshees at that time. Yeah. And then that movie comes out, and the first question I have is, was I wrong earlier in the year? And maybe the answer is yes.
I mean, and he's great in The Batman, too.
And he's great in The Batman. He's the best thing about the Ron Howard movie as well. So, like, he's had a really great year and should probably win just on the totality of it. Mm-hmm. But that said, if Paul Mescal was to somehow slip in and win, I would absolutely lose my mind over that. I would lose my mind. It should come down to those two as far as I'm concerned.
I think right now the win is either Colin Farrell or Austin Butler. I think Brendan Fraser, I'm seeing The Whale tonight. I'll know tomorrow how I feel about it. But the reviews of The Whale the last few weeks have been shockingly low, and a lot of people are not loving it, so that makes me wonder if I think he gets in for the nominations, but I don't think Brendan Fraser wins anything anymore. No. But we'll see.
No, I'm with you on that. I don't think he wins. I think he gets in really for two reasons. One, I think he's genuinely great. The film around him, debatable. Okay. I don't love it either. I can't say I don't hate it like most people do. I think the extremism on a lot of these films is too much, and it's wild. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's the worst movie I've ever seen. It is mean-spirited, but there is purpose to the meanness of the movie. Mm. And that's why his performance is crucial, because it's all about him and his characteristics, his optimism and love kind of punching through all of that negativity. Mm-hmm. Again, as obvious and myopic as you may deem that to be, we can have that conversation. But that is the point of the movie. And his performance, I think, is genuinely great.
Right.
So it should be nominated on that merit alone. But then there's also the narrative of Brendan Fraser. And who doesn't love the narrative?
Right now, if I had to predict today, I think the winner of Best Actor in March could be Austin Butler.
Yeah, and that makes sense.
Because of Rami Malek's win for Bohemian Rhapsody, I think all it takes is Austin Butler winning at Golden Globes, maybe at Critics' Choice, and giving like two dynamite speeches, and we're off and running.
And I could see that happening. It's a better performance than Rami Malek, I think. And I'm not going to complain about it.
Like, I feel like if Elvis wins big somewhere at the Oscars, that's the one that makes sense to me, so...
Yeah. Well, I guess on that note, do you think Boz or anything else from that film has a chance?
I think Lerman has a chance now getting into Best Director. I didn't think so a few months ago, but he's been like, the movie's been overperforming, and I think it's going to do very well. You know, it's a movie that everyone really likes, and I would have liked it even more if not for that Tom Hanks performance, which I thought was very odd.
Yeah.
You're not wrong.
Bizarre. Bizarre. And I love Tom Hanks. I'm like, what? Like, this could have been like a supporting actor nomination for Tom Hanks, and that makeup and everything and his voice, it's very strange, and it pulls the movie down for me.
Oh, I completely agree. Yeah. You know, there is the makeup element of it. Maybe that's slightly distracting. I can get past that. I think the performance itself is slightly out of place. It doesn't feel nearly as grounded as Austin Butler. But I don't, and maybe that's a Baz Luhrmann thing, though, to be fair, because Baz's style is so over the top and absurd and ridiculous and fun that maybe he was asking Tom Hanks to maybe match that a little bit. I don't know. But it certainly doesn't fit well with Austin Butler. I don't think.
Yeah. Anyway. It felt like a character that should have been in the Batman.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. That would have felt more appropriate.
Yeah, no, you're definitely not wrong there. Okay, let's switch to another movie, one that I love, one that I think most of film Twitter is really championing and rooting for. What are the chances that RRR does anything beyond best song?
Yeah. Probably slim. You know, I think it's slim. Like, people are talking it could get into that 10th best picture slot. Now, I was predicting Babylon to get the 10th best picture slot. Now I'm not so sure. I just don't know. Will enough people screen the movie? It's 3 hours long. It's a different kind of film. I really was taken with it the other night. I finally watched it on Netflix. Yeah. And it's a big, boisterous, crazy movie with big, like, some huge action spectacle effects. Yeah. And then they're dancing. And I'm like, I mean... Yeah. It's possible. I don't see it getting into best picture. I see it getting into like a best song, maybe a couple technicals.
Okay.
But I would be surprised if it got that 10th slot for best picture.
Okay. Well, what are your 10 right now out of curiosity?
Oh gosh. Can I think of all of them off the top of my head? Let me see. So Avatar, The Way of Water gets in.
Okay.
Banshees of Inisherin.
Banshees.
Elvis. Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Okay.
The Fablemans.
Fablemans, yeah.
Tar.
And Women Talking?
I still think Women Talking gets in.
Yeah.
Like, that's like my number 8 or 9 right now.
Okay.
I think that gets in. What am I forgetting? I don't think Glass Onion gets in.
No. Did you say Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once gets in.
Okay.
I had Babylon. I'm the only person, I feel like, in the universe who's predicting Decision to Leave gets in, maybe. I'm just still stuck on Drive My Car getting in last year.
Maybe.
And nobody was predicting that. Like, well, some were. But I was like, I think Drive My Car gets in for both picture and director. And people were looking at me like I was crazy. And then it happened. So I feel like every year there's that international movie.
But
I think it's a smaller film than Drive My Car was in terms of all of the promotion it was getting. So maybe I'm just like thinking too hard on that. I don't know.
No, Decision to Leave. It's interesting because when that first came out, it felt like it was getting tons of love as one of the best films of the year. The performances, the direction of it. I feel like the conversation on it has slowed down a little bit. Maybe that's part of it. You know, but maybe it has a Drive My Car kind of run. It feels like, and I might just be misremembering, it feels like Drive My Car had a little bit more momentum at this time than Drive My Car. I wonder if another film, foreign film, replaces it because it feels like it's picked up a little bit more momentum in recent weeks is All Quiet on the Western Front.
Right.
Maybe that somehow slips in.
Yeah, and my best picture video, I talked about All Quiet on the Western Front as being like that spoiler. I thought this could get in. If Babylon falters, if Decision to Leave doesn't make it, I do think All Quiet gets in for a lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think it showing up on all those shortlists, they just released a shortlist a few days ago. I think All Quiet showed up on 5 of them. Like, it's getting seen and people are loving it, and I thought it was amazing. I reviewed it for In Session Film. I gave
it
4 stars, and it's going to be on my top 10 of the year list.
Same.
I think it's great.
Yeah,
And the first movie version won Best Picture way back in the early 1930s.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reasons why it could get in. So I'm starting to shift and thinking that will take a 9th or 10th slot for Best Picture.
I think that would be an interesting story too, just in terms of the narrative. It's the first German film production of that story,
right?
All these years later, also getting into Beck's picture, I think would be a lot of fun. Let me ask you this as well. Speaking of spoilers, we haven't had an animated film get in the best picture in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What could Pinocchio somehow, Del Toro's Pinocchio, Could that somehow...
Not the Zemeckis one?
Yeah, not the Zemeckis. Yeah.
Oh my God, that was bad.
Totally forgot that existed for a moment.
That was so bad.
I know.
That was shockingly bad.
So bad. Del Toro's Pinocchio, on the other hand, very good. Did well with Netflix, according to Netflix anyway. And is really well reviewed. I imagine it's a front runner for best animated film as well. Could that maybe play spoiler?
Yeah, I really loved it. I watched it the other night. It's very dark and it's such a fresh new take on the Pinocchio story. I just feel like it's going to get into animated feature. I don't know if there'll be enough people championing it to get into best picture. I don't see that happening. But again, if enough people are, you know, voting for it in that top category, it could get in. But I don't see it happening right now.
Okay. Well, maybe we can take up the mantle. In Session Film will be the one to champion that film for Best Picture.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so Pinocchio's probably not getting in. Maybe Decision to Leave. Is there anything else on the periphery that you could see maybe sneaking in there?
Let me think. I mean, I would love to see Pearl get in, but that's never going to happen.
Never. Yeah, that would be awesome.
that would be my biggest scream on Oscar nominations morning. Mm. Probably Mia Goth. Mia Goth taking like the fifth slot for best actress would be cool.
Yeah.
What are some other favorites? I loved Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, but that's a very small movie. I still think in maybe a different year, if that film had come out in December, like maybe Emma Thompson gets in for best actress, but it's a tiny little movie, and I just don't know if people are still talking about it now.
Yeah.
I thought The Northman was great, but again, that came out in April, so I don't think that has had a lot of momentum since its release. Yeah, I'm trying to think of like what made me think Babylon would get in was its late December release. If Babylon had come out in September, October, I don't think it gets in, but it's kind of fresh in all of our minds right now. Oscar nominations are just a few weeks away. So that's why I thought it would get in, even if it was kind of polarizing. I'm still not taking it out because of the 10. If it was 8, some years we have 8.
Yeah, it would be gone.
So it wouldn't get in there. But I'm like, there's some people who really love it. So, and it's about early Hollywood.
They love movies about themselves. We know that.
but that's also kind of the Fablemans is a celebration of movie making. So they could... Yeah. Go for Fablemans instead, which I think will happen.
And that is the interesting thing about Babylon as well, you know, because we just reviewed it on the main show, and we talked quite a bit about how that is it's kind of a bleak movie. It's almost the anti La La Land, and how it's critiquing the industry more than anything else. I think that's what's so fascinating about that final shot at the end with Diego Calva. Because there's been so much talk about how it invokes this feeling of cinema and the power it holds over us. I don't think that's what that scene is doing at all. If anything, I think it's the opposite. I think it's mostly about the devastation he's experiencing as a result of being marginalized and being chewed up and spit out with absolutely no regard. Perhaps the frustration of there is truth to that idea that cinema holds power over us. There is truth to that. But when you go through what he does, that many people do, it's a double-edged sword in that regard. It's not like what the Fablemans is doing, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So again, how do people in the industry feel about that? I'm really curious.
Well, I had such a weird reaction to the ending of Babylon because I really liked the first half of the last scene. I love this idea that he's watching Singing in the Rain, and it brings back his memories of so many things we saw throughout the film, and he starts crying, and then the camera pulls down underneath the balcony, and we see all of these audience members oblivious to his pain, and they're just enjoying the movie like so many of us do. And Chazelle like pulls back on like 8 to 10 audience members in close-up enjoying Singing in the Rain, and I thought to myself, this is a perfect ending. And then it goes for like another 5 minutes and we get Avatar in like a edited selection of clips, and I'm like, okay, I understand what you're doing here.
Yeah.
This is way, I called it masturbatory. That's a word I don't use very often, but that felt kind of self-indulgent to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's a fair criticism. I mean, really the whole film is that though, to be honest, does not hold anything back.
It's going to end on this nice little note that I felt. It felt right, and then it just kept going, and I'm like, no.
No, that's very understandable. But you know, but that is to say, like, I'm curious how people in the industry will respond to it, because it is a pretty, I mean, it's a fun and diverting movie for sure, but it is also a scathing critique of the shallowness of the industry. So will they respond to it in that regard? Maybe they overlook it. I don't know.
Right now, I mean, it's depending on, we'll see how the film does over the next couple big ceremonies. Right now, I'm thinking it might not make it into picture, even though it's hard not to keep it in when there's 10. It's like, there's only so many. I think one spoiler could potentially be Black Panther: Wakanda Forever. I don't see that on a lot of list for Best Picture, but the first film did get into Best Picture.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was as successful as the first one. I think that's what most people think.
Yeah.
But it's a very emotional movie, and it's long, and it was very successful. What does it hit? Like 430 million at the box office. It's successful. Yeah. Like, and I'm not even sure if Angela Bassett gets in for supporting actress. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
She got in at Critics' Choice and Golden Globe. So I'm like, maybe. But we'll see.
That's an interesting point, because earlier we were talking about how unpredictable that category is at the moment. So maybe she does get in. Maybe she is the front runner and we just don't know it.
She's going to win it all. Would that be something?
That would be something for sure.
And for that one glorious scene where she just goes off. It's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you about my favorite category, Best Original Score. What are you thinking for that category?
Best Original Score. So they released the shortlist. I remember seeing that the Batman did not make it. Is that right?
Boo.
which I thought was an amazing score.
Yeah.
From earlier this year. Mm-hmm. Like, does the Fablemans have a score?
It's a good question. John Williams doing some great work there, but how much? I don't know. I will say this. I love the music for the Fablemans, but I don't know the technicalities as far as, you know, what John Williams brings to the table versus other content that Spielberg is using there or that Williams is using there. I don't know.
I think if there's one category that Babylon should get in, it's score.
I agree. Okay. Yeah.
And it won for La La Land many years ago, right? I mean, I think that's... shouldn't happen. He should get in there.
Yeah.
I love the score for Tar is really good too.
Yeah, Tar. I love Women Talking. I feel like should be a lock. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it will be, but it should be. Pinocchio. The other one aside from the Batman that did not get in, and this is more understandable because it's a small little movie that, you know, only cinephiles watch probably, but the score for After Yang should have been
on the short list.
Mm. It is incredible. It's very, very good, but it's from a composer that, you know, not many people are aware of. And again, it's a small Koganada film that, you know, not many people saw, most likely, at least voters. So I do understand it, but that's also one of the best scores of the year. Banshees, I think, is really great.
That's a nice score. That probably gets in just the wave of love for that movie. Like, it could get some extra nominations that we're not entirely expecting. I could see that getting into score.
RRR is another great one. I mean, there's Glass Onion, even, I think, has a really fun and energetic score. Yep. So...
and it's fun when you get to these, when you get to the more technical categories like score, it's not just going to be necessarily five best picture contenders. It doesn't have to be like the big movies. It can be like an RRR or a Glass Onion that might not show up in picture, which is cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious how they dwindle that down. I know for me, that's a category where I could have a top 10. I don't know how I would be able to get it down to just five. I think the fall season especially has been terrific for score. And then there's stuff like the Batman and After Ying that came out earlier in the year. Or even the Northman, I think, has a terrific score.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's been
Northman should get into cinematography, but that category is so stacked. I don't even know if it places in the top 10, but that was a really great, you know, the beautiful looking movie is
yeah, it is. Yeah. The cinematography, the production design of that. I mean, this is a different topic away from awards, but if we're just considering what is the, one of the best directed movies of the year, it's definitely The Northman.
Yeah.
And not just cinematography and production, but staging and composition, the way Eggers uses the camera in that film is incredible. And then there's all of the action you get in that last 20 minutes or whatever. It's really great. But understandably, a film that the Academy's never going to go for. So what are you going to do?
It's so hard when a movie opens in the first 6 months of the year. When I see an Everything Everywhere All at Once and Elvis sticking around, I'm always really happy about that. Crazy. Because often the first 8 months, we don't see a lot hanging on come the following spring and in award season. So the fact that we have two big ones hanging around and Everything Everywhere All at Once is probably going to win some awards for Best Picture and things. That's really cool. That came out in March of earlier this year. So,
yeah, Elvis is one that I can at least understand a little bit more because it's a biopic and Baz Luhrmann has some history with the Oscars. So I get it.
He's never been nominated for Best Director, if I'm not mistaken. He did not get a nomination for Best Director for Moulin Rouge. So I don't think he's ever been nominated for Best Director at the Oscars. That'd be his first time, which is crazy.
That is a little surprising. I would think that his films, at least in some way, have been nominated for something.
Right.
But yeah, you would think that he would have been nominated for Moulin Rouge. It feels like a movie that he would have been nominated for anyway.
Yeah, I remember so many people were upset that because it is very much a director's film, Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was a front runner for Best Picture that season. A lot of people loved it, including myself. And people were so mad that Luhrmann did get into Best Director. But my favorite film of the year was Mulholland Drive. And David Lynch got that one off nomination for Best Director. Yeah. That was the only nomination Mulholland Drive got at the Oscars. So I'm like, well, but David got in. So.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah. No, I was happy. Live with that. Yeah. No, I say that to say, though, okay, so Elvis makes a little bit of sense to me. Everything Everywhere All at Once makes absolutely no sense whatsoever to me because it's this film from A24, and A24 has had some success, not a ton. I feel like from year to year, it's a coin toss as to whether they're going to dive into award season as heavily as they have with some of their films anyway. But it's this really uncanny, surreal movie from a pair of directors who have only made this was only like their third film maybe together.
Yeah, they did Swiss Army Man.
They did Swiss Army Man. So maybe this was just the second film. I think this might just be their follow-up to that one. So it's, they haven't done a movie in a while. They clearly have had no relationship with the Academy to this point. And it's just it's this really weird, bizarre film that I feel like under any other circumstance, the Academy would easily overlook and just be like, let's move on to the next thing. And then you couple it with what you just talked about with it came out in like April, made a ton of money and has somehow stuck around. Like it just, it is so unconventional to the Oscar narrative.
Right. Like, I mean, in the summer I thought, man, this movie's sticking around. Maybe it gets a nomination at the Oscars next year for original screenplay.
Yeah.
And now it's like, it could win the whole thing for
the
picture.
Whole thing.
Like that's crazy.
Imagine. I don't even know how I would react to something like that. That would be incredible.
Like, I don't see Everything Everywhere getting the Best Picture trophy. But I think part of it is there haven't been a lot of movies in the second half of 2022 that everyone's really rallying around the way they are for Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I agree. Yeah.
Like the Fablemans won at Toronto and that was kind of set up to be the big like Best Picture contender, Spielberg's personal memoir on film. And I loved it. It's on my top 10 for sure. I loved it. But there, but I feel like the buzz around the Fablemans in the last month has been kind of muted. Like, I'm not hearing a lot.
Other than, you know, I've seen some critics, cinephiles, still championing that film.
Yeah.
But I think also the Academy has more or less proven in the last few years that they really don't care what film Twitter thinks.
They don't. Yeah.
So I don't know, for as much as we might push it, and I've seen some incredible analysis on the film or people posting clips of it talking about Spielberg's direction that I think is all warranted. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some conversation on it from our end, but does that translate to the Academy? And to your point, probably not. So I don't know. It's hard to say. I would hope that it's in the conversation. If it's not the Fablemans, and we're assuming that A24 is not winning here again,
Banshees will probably get it.
Banshees or Tar, maybe?
Tar can't win Best Picture. I just cross my fingers it gets in, because that's my favorite film of the year. I think that movie is amazing.
Same, as of right now. That and After Sun, I go back and forth on, but yeah.
But it's too divisive. I feel like at the Oscars, to win Best Picture, it has to be a movie that everybody likes a lot, not a movie that some people love and other people don't like.
But yeah, which is
because you have to get those second, third place votes to win. That's like, I think that's how Green Book won. When that happens.
I guess then looking at the films that'll be nominated, it has to be Banshees. I don't know of anything else that it seems consensus.
Right. I think the Fablemans could get it if enough people rally around.
Yeah, the Fablemans.
Right now, if I had to choose what wins Best Picture of the Oscars, Banshees feels like the most likely choice.
Yeah.
That's a great movie. I loved it. So that
would be fun. Absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm completely with you. I will not be mad if it wins, although I am always under, like, the thing that I keep saying is, your favorite film losing Best Picture is probably the best thing that ever happens to it. Because the discourse, whatever wins, it does not, unless it's Parasite.
It didn't affect that movie. Everybody loves that it won Best Picture, and that did not. But when you have a movie like Green Book that some people liked, I thought it was fine, but then it wins Best Picture and you're like, Best Picture.
I know. Like, I feel like Moonlight and Parasite have this general feeling of, okay, those are deserved winners. But everything else, if you like that movie, just, you better hope it doesn't win, because people will come after it and they will not hold back. So in some ways, I'm kind of hoping Tar doesn't win Best Picture or everything doesn't win Best Picture, because I know in months' time, everyone's going to be coming after it with their pitchforks.
But when it comes to Best Director, that's what's really confusing, because I don't see that Martin McDonagh can win Best Director. That doesn't feel right to me. I mean, we'll see if he wins in a
writing,
couple of the upcoming
screenplay,
ceremonies.
Right?
Maybe in screenplay, but director doesn't seem like, and if I remember correctly, he wasn't even nominated for Three Billboards. Mm-hmm. Like, that was like a surprise. Like, he didn't get in for that. So I don't know. Maybe there's something he's doing behind the scenes that he's not getting enough love from Academy members. I don't know.
Director feels like it should be a Spielberg lock, given
the nominees we've been talking. Will it be like about a Power of the Dog kind of thing, where no matter what happens in all the other categories, this is Spielberg's year, we give it to Spielberg, and then Best Picture can go to another movie?
Exactly. That does seem like the trajectory. It would not shock me at all if he wins director and then Banshees goes on to win Best Picture.
Right, that could happen. I mean, it's hard with Spielberg, because he's won twice Best Director, so it's not like we need to give him the Oscar.
No.
It's not like the Martin Scorsese, The Parted Year. It's like, but it also has been almost 25 years since he won for Saving Private Ryan. And this is like his most personal film.
And it's a personal film.
And it's really good. So that's what makes sense to me. But it also feels kind of like a safe choice here at the end of December to think, in March, are we all going to rally around giving Spielberg another trophy? I don't know.
Well, see, and that's interesting. See, now I'm going back to what I just noted a moment ago, that I've seen a lot of cinephiles and critics championing Spielberg's direction for this movie. Now, if he goes on to win Best Director, does that flip on a dime? Like, do people then go after him? I don't know. Like, that wouldn't surprise me either, but I feel like it seems like the obvious safe choice, but also it feels like the right choice. And sometimes those are the same thing. I don't know. It feels like this is Spielberg's year, and it should be for best director anyway.
Yeah. And when it comes to the Fablemans, what has it been, 3 months since this was announced? I'm still really baffled that Michelle Williams isn't going for supporting. Because I think
she's going for lead, is she not? Is that what they're
saying? She's going for lead. Mm-hmm. I think she gets in. She takes that fourth or fifth slot. She cannot possibly win over Kate Blanchett or Michelle Yeoh.
No.
I don't think that can happen.
And how many times I really loved her in the movie. Supporting?
Yeah, I really love her in the movie. And there's large chunks of that film that she's not in.
Yeah.
It's the son's story. So you could totally say that's a supporting performance. I'm really curious what the thinking is behind that.
I don't know. I guess my best theory is that the character is so important to his trajectory and a lot of the choices he makes that there's weight to the performance and to the character. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's lead. That's just
the same goes for Viola Davis in Fences, which I think.
It
was a lead female role in that movie and she won best supporting actress. So it wouldn't be like, oh no, Michelle Williams is in too much of the Fablemans to be.
Yeah.
No, Viola Davis.
I completely agree with that for sure.
But like, I think she would sweep best supporting actress all the way to the Oscars. I think it would just be that like Laura Dern Marriage Story kind of thing.
Makes sense. I got a couple of other questions here before we wind down here. So let's talk about Sarah Polley for a second. Mm. Women Talking. So I have been looking forward to this film for 10 years. Stories We Tell, I think, is one of the best documentaries of decade. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredible. And we haven't, for heartbreaking reasons, if you know her story, we haven't had much of her since then. And this is our first feature film since Stories We Tell. I really loved it. I think it's getting critically, it's getting pretty good reviews. I don't know if there's as much momentum around it as some of these others that we've talked about, but how do you feel about that film? Where does it fit in with the
Oscars? I haven't seen it yet. I live in Reno and we've gotten almost everything, but Women Talking has not come here yet. I'm hoping it comes over like New Year's weekend or the weekend after, because I really want to see it. And I just made a video about Away From Her and Julie Christie's nomination.
Movie.
Such a great film. And Sarah Polley got a nomination for that screenplay. And I feel like Away From Her was a much smaller movie than Women Talking is. It's a big ensemble, period film. Like, she's absolutely getting into... It's adapted screenplay, right? It's based on a book.
Yes. Yeah, adapted. Yeah.
And I think she's the front runner to win that right now. If I remember right, I looked at like the potential nominees for adapted screenplay, and the other four were like, Sarah Polley, I feel like, is a bigger name. She has some great credits behind her in writing, directing, and as an actress. We know her, of course, as an actress too.
Yes.
So I feel like there's always a push every year to get one woman into director. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
And I feel like from what I've seen and what I've read about it in the trailer, I feel like Women Talking feels like it'll be more of an Academy Awards movie than it is like Golden Globes, where it didn't do very well. Yeah. I think if there's one movie that started very soft in the award season that's going to do better at the end, Women Talking feels like that movie to me, based on everything I've read about it. So I think Sarah Polley could get into best director for that movie. And she could potentially win best adapted screenplay.
Yeah. And I don't think this is a pandering nomination if she gets in. I think it would be really well deserved. I know there was some back and forth on the grayscale of the movie. I think it's all very effective given the middle ground that the script kind of sulks in terms of the conversation and the dialogue. I think it's all very appropriate, but it's not just the cinematography and the color palette of the film. It's the composition, the way she uses the camera to keep things fresh and interesting, because so much of the movie takes place in one location, which over time could perhaps have a stale feeling to it, but I don't think it ever becomes stale. She does such a great job of keeping things very interesting. Of course, the performances are compelling as well. I think it would be deserved. Mm-hmm. I would love to see it. I don't. That would not be a pandering nomination, I think. So yeah, I'm definitely for it. The other director that has no chance to get in but should is Charlotte Wells. Charlotte Wells and her direction. What's that?
Which film was that for?
Yeah, for After Sun. Now, After Sun has very little momentum. Paul Mescal might have a chance, perhaps. Who knows? But even his chances, I would imagine, are slim. But Charlotte Wells' direction, I would argue, is maybe the best direction of the year. I think it's that good.
Okay.
That is a film that has great performances for sure. But that is a film that relies heavily on visual storytelling. There is so much that she does with the camera where she uses objects. She puts objects in the frame. That's what the camera is looking at. And those objects say something about our characters and what they're experiencing. And it's really interesting how she does that. Or even just the way she frames the father-daughter dynamic is really moving. That film has a strong pathos to it. And a lot of it is the musical choices that she makes. It is the framing of it. It's how she captures the tender bond between those two characters. I think she should be in the conversation for Best Director. She won't be, and it's a shame, but she should. Her and Sarah Polley, I think, should, at least in terms of the argument, they should both very much be in the conversation.
Yeah, and one film we haven't even mentioned in this hour, we should say, is The Woman King, too.
The Woman King, yeah, that's another great one. Yeah, absolutely.
I think in my video I made a few weeks ago, like, is my 11th or 12th place slot for Best Picture. Now, with Babylon kind of sliding, The Woman King could get into Best Picture. Yeah. And I know the category at Critics' Choice was 10 nominations or 10 slots for Best Director. But the director of Woman King got in, rightfully so. I loved her work on that, Gina Prince by the Wood. Yeah. So she's a potential nominee there, too.
Yeah.
If they didn't go for Sarah Polley, that's a very well-directed film.
Very well-directed. Lots of action in it. Mm-hmm. But it's also the quiet, intimate moments of that film are really strong. That one I'd love to see as well. Mm-hmm. There are some... I'm going to be real curious what the Academy does, because there's potential there for a few of them to get in.
And Viola Davis could get in, too, for the Oscar over, say, a Margot Robbie. Like, Viola Davis could get in.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, you can never count out Viola Davis. Yeah. They love her.
I still think Danielle Deadwyler gets in for Till for Best Actress at the Oscars.
She should,
She's so great in that movie all the way through.
And I think
she didn't get in at Golden Globe. So there's she's out. And I'm like, well, hold on.
What I love about her in that film, especially in regards to Oscars talk, because I noted earlier that not all the time, but most of the time, they love these really loud performances that have capital A acting in them, which is fine. I tend to prefer the quieter, introspective, subtle performances of Ryan Gosling in First Man, if you will. Masterpiece of performance there. But I think what's interesting about her and Till is that there are the capital A acting moments, you know, when she first sees her son, for example. But really a lot of that film is internalized.
Right.
It is a really quiet, intimate performance for the most part. Mm-hmm. That doesn't scream Oscars to me necessarily, but it also makes sense that she's in the conversation. It is one of the best performances of the year, regardless of category, I think.
What's hurting her right now is Till is not showing up anywhere for director, the movie picture, itself. Screenplay. Yeah. The movie, I saw it opening weekend when it came here in October, and the movie I thought was just solid. It's like a 3-star movie. It's good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but she is great.
She is so good.
If the movie were a little better, I think she'd be in no matter what. I just feel like people aren't loving the movie, so it's getting harder to maybe include her. So I hope she gets into the Oscar.
I'm with you on that. The script perhaps hinders the film a little bit from being as great as it could be. But yeah, her performance is terrific.
Yeah,
absolutely no denying it. So, but it's surprising to me in the sense that it's more quiet than it is conventional, I guess. But
will Cate Blanchett sweep? That's the question. Will she get her third Oscar in March? It seems too easy.
I don't know. Okay. So, yes, Cate Blanchett, if she wins, I'm not going to be mad. It's Cate Blanchett. She's incredible. But this has to be Michelle Yeoh's year, right? It has to be.
Yeah. I mean, she's never been nominated, Michelle Yeoh.
She's got such a narrative.
She's got such a narrative. People love her. We've always really adored her work for many years. And now she's got the very great, rich role that showcases everything she can do. And everybody loves the movie. It might not win Best Picture. What's the big award it could take? Cate Blanchett already has two. Tar is not a movie that everyone in the Academy is going to love. It's very long and very strange in a different way than Everything Everywhere is Strange. I don't know. I would love to see Blanchett win a third Oscar for what I think is one of her very best performances in Tar. But Michelle Yeoh is what I'm feeling right now.
I think
Michelle Yeoh is going to win at SAG, and then it's going to escalate to her Oscar win. That's what I'm feeling right now, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm feeling that as well. I hope you're right. And again, I love Cate. I would imagine, I'm absolutely speculating here, but if you were to ask Cate Blanchett, surely she'd be like, yes, I have two Oscars. Please give this to Michelle Yeoh. Like, this is her year. Like, I don't think Cate will be missing the third Oscar. She's fine. She's got two. Maybe it's more competitive internally than I'm giving it credit for. I don't know. But I would think that voters understand, okay, Kate's been here before. She has her trophies. Let's give it to the narrative. Let's give it to Michelle. She deserves it.
And I believe, is it true an Asian American woman has never been nominated for Best Actress?
I think I did read that. I think that is true.
Just insanity. Yeah. For 95 years. So I think a lot of people are going to get behind her. And
just because of that. Work. Yeah.
And not just because of that. Deserving. It's a worthy performance. It is great.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
That'd be a very exciting narrative and win. And if you're watching Michelle Yeoh at all during award season and these like Hollywood Reporter roundtables and Variety and these videos.
Oh, yeah.
She's just so lovely. She's so great.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, no, she's.
It'd be an awesome win.
Yeah. It's impossible to not like her. I would love to hear those speeches as well.
Yeah.
And more than anything, it's a deserving performance. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely worthy of the win. So yeah, very, very excited for all of that. I guess the last question I have for you here, and then we'll kind of wind down here. So we've kind of scatterbrained some of these categories. I want to know the one category or the one performance, the one nominee, regardless of category, that you're maybe hoping for the most. Like, what is the one thing that you want to see the most out of this year's Oscars?
Like to win?
To win. Again, regardless of category, what is the one thing you want more than anything else?
Like, if I had to pick, like, it's weird because I think Cate Blanchett gave my favorite performance of the year. But if there was like one moment that night that I would love to see the most, I think it's Michelle Yeoh winning Best Actress.
Okay.
I would love to see Ke-Hee Kwan win for Best Supporting Actor. Supporting Actress. Yeah. Like I made a video a few months ago about Angela Bassett. She is amazing. I love her. So if she were to win Best Supporting Actress for Black Panther, that would be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then Best Actor, I'm not like Austin Butler or Colin Farrell would be great. You know what I would love to see win? I would love to see Todd Field win Best Director for Tar.
Interesting. I love that.
That would be up there. Like, I don't even know if he gets the nomination. I think he does. I think he gets the nomination for Tar for Best Director.
See, now that's an interesting one for me because when we reviewed that on the show some weeks ago, you know, my argument for it was like, I understand that he's most likely going to be talked about for his screenplay here.
Right.
But I think his directing is equally pivotal as to why that film is as effective as it is.
Yeah.
And he should be talked about more in the vein of Best Director, or equally anyway, in the vein of Best Director as his screenplay. So I love that pick. That would
his
be
work
awesome.
Is so yeah. His work is so strong. I've loved all three of his movies. He's 3 for 3. In the Bedroom Same. Was great. He got a Best Director nomination for In the Bedroom. And then Little Children is amazing. I saw that movie twice the first week it was out when I lived in LA. Little Children blew me away. And he's such a great director. And we've had a 16-year wait for Tar. He's been doing a lot of things, but nothing has come to fruition. And it's just such a well-directed movie all the way through. Like, you can tell.
I agree.
So much thought has been put into every scene and how it's and all, like the later, what I didn't even notice the first time, like the ghost story of the film and the frames of the movie where you can see there's like there's a person in the shadows and all of these little like details he scatters throughout the movie.
All that's like, great.
I think my choice outside of maybe Michelle Yeoh for actress would be Todd Field, best director for Tar. I thought he did a great job.
No, I love that pick. And you're right. The intricate details of every frame is really great. But I also think that film falls apart if not for these two things. The long one take shot when she's doing the class early on in the film.
That blew my mind.
Incredible. And you know, that is so necessary given reveals that come later on, right? Mm-hmm. So he has to nail that. Otherwise, it does not work. The other thing, too, is because of the time jumping of the film, it would, you know, if not calculated correctly, it would be easy to kind of get lost or for the film to feel muddled in terms of its storytelling because we're jumping around through gaps. But I never felt like the film was confounding in that. Like, it's still very seamless. Everything is attainable in that movie. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to the editing of it and how he's able to bring characters in and out of the story in a way that, you know, that flows and has a rhythm to it. So, that could have easily have been mishandled. And if so, we're talking about a very different experience at that point. So his direction, I think, is pivotal to that film as well as the writing of it. So
I'm just hoping it gets into the top five for best director.
One can hope.
Don't let him slide by and throw in some sort of random nomination for a movie that's maybe not as deserving. I think Tar should get into best screenplay, best director, best picture, and best actress for Blanchett. And I'd even throw in Nina Haas for best supporting actress. I thought she was great.
I like that. Yeah. Love me some Nina Haas.
Nina Haas, who I'm watching. I'm watching Jack Reacher season 3 on Amazon, and Nina Haas is in it, and she's great.
Oh, is she? Okay. I did not know that. That's interesting. But I do love me some Nina Haas, so that would be fun. Yeah. All right. Well, as we wind down here, why don't you tell us about all of the fun things you do, your podcast or YouTube channel. Where can we find you on social media?
So you can find me on Twitter. That's where I'm most active, at Mr. Brian Rowe. That's Mr. Brian Rowe. I have a YouTube channel called Brian Rowe Video, where every week I talk about the Oscars. Sometimes they're history videos, sometimes they're prediction videos, but you can find me on there every Tuesday with a new video on Brian Rowe Video. I have a podcast called which is Film at 50, where we talk about movies released 50 years ago. And you can catch my reviews at In Session Film.
Yeah, be sure to go and check out all of Brian's great work. Follow him on social media and the Twitter sphere, doing some really, really great work and very engaging too. Brian's always asking some really fun questions that you'll want to participate in. So, yeah, thanks for being here, man. Really do appreciate it. As I noted earlier in this conversation, we just got done talking about Babylon and Glass Onion. Episode 514 is available right now, so you can go and check all that out. It was really fun. And then in 2 weeks, episode 516 is our In Session Film Awards. As much as we talk about the Oscars, we all know it's the In Session Film Awards that matter most. So make sure you tune in for all of that coming very, very soon. So thanks again, Brian, for being here. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you all next time on the In Session Film Podcast. Go Todd Field!
Go Todd Field!